All right, we're still going through the book of James here, and today is how to be wise. How to be wise. So we've done a lot through the book of James, how to live well, how to give well, how to have faith well. Today, how to speak well, how to be wise, how to have wisdom well. And we're going to kind of go verse by verse, because there is so much riches in here, you guys. After I'm dead and gone, which could be sooner, could be later, I hope it's later, but it could be sooner, you know, this will still be here. And as Episcopalians, you don't see many Episcopalians holding up the Bible, or I'm not thumping it right now, I'm pointing to it, all right? I want you to know these words, because they will continue to nourish you. That's my hope. And so if you're here this morning and what you need this morning is the basics of the gospel, I hope you get that this morning. If you need here to move beyond the milk and go to real meat and substance, and if you're vegetarians, I'm sorry for the metaphor, Paul used it, then I hope you get that as well. All right, so book of James, chapter 3, verse 13. Who is wise and understanding among you? Let's just stop there. How many of you would raise your hand and answer yes? All right, very good. We've got one honest person here who knows that she is wise. All right, let them show it by their good life, by deeds done in humility that comes from wisdom. So let's talk about that. Stephen Batchelor. Was a Buddhist monk. He's not a monk anymore. He got married. And he was talking about Buddhist things, especially the Sanskrit words that are at the base of some of them. He says that wisdom, in Buddhist understanding, is something you do for yourself. It helps you to live a good life. You want to be wise, do you not? Your life is going to go well if you are wise. Compassion is something you do for others. And for the spiritually mature person, the line between wisdom and compassion is obliterated, is gone. Wisdom and compassion merge in the mature and whole life. In Scripture, so let's talk about what wisdom is in Scripture. In Scripture, wisdom is multivalent, has a lot of different meanings. But I'm going to give you one that goes through the book of Proverbs, okay? A theme of wisdom going through the book of Proverbs. Wisdom is this. It's human ability. It's your ability to see yourself, others, and the world from God's perspective. To see yourself, others, and the world in light of eternity. In the light of God. So it makes sense. So Socrates asked this question in Plato's Republic. He asked, this is the question going through the whole thing. Is it better to be just or to appear just? You ever ask yourself that question? It's because you're all good people. You don't ask yourself these questions, all right? Is it better to be just or appear just? At the end of the Republic, it's better to be just. But there was a case made for appearing just. Your reputation is good, so you get all the benefits of appearing to be a just person and all the benefits from doing the injustice that you do. Wisdom, however, says that it's better to be just. In Scripture, the reason for this is we see it in light of eternity and in light of God because we believe God is really in control of the world, so it is much better to be just. So Scripture is wisdom, the ability to see yourself, others, and the world from God's perspective. Let me put a finer point on it. All right, take this question home with you. Wisdom is the ability to answer the question, who am I? Who are you? Great teacher, Anthony DeMello, he points out, he says that some people say the most important question is, who is Jesus Christ? But if you give the right answer to that question, the answer Peter gave, I believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God, the Messiah, the Son of the living God. Who is the I doing the believing? Who is the I doing the believing? Who are you? What can you do? What can you not do? What's in your realm? What's not? When you start to answer that question, you start to get a sense of what Scripture is meaning by wisdom. And you're going to start to live more wisely in the world if you can start to answer, who am I? What can I do? What can I not do? Sit with that. We're gonna keep going. But if you harbor this is verse 14. But if you harbor bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth. Such wisdom does not come down from heaven, but is earthly, unspiritual, of the devil. For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice. So who is wise and understanding above us, among us? We'll find out. It's going to be shown by your good life and by the deeds done in humility that comes from wisdom, when wisdom and compassion come together and they're one in you. But if you're not there yet, if you harbor envy and selfish ambition, let's talk about those, all right? Let's talk about envy and selfish ambition. Selfish ambition, this was used by Aristotle. It's climbing the political ladder and pushing people out of the way to get there. How many of you, in order to protect your own ego, have ever cut someone down or said a sharp word? All right, you don't have to expose yourselves here and raise your hand, all right? This, if you look at your life, we do this. We have done it. I think every one of us. We put others down to make sure that our position is secure. What about envy? All right, so many of you are like, well, I don't need someone else's car. I'm good. What are the things that I think this is a position of saying what I have is not enough. I need something more. I need more knowledge. I need more spirituality. I need more friends. I need more security. I need more whatever it may be. Sets us on the path of looking around and takes us out of the realm of wisdom. So what has James done here? Just like Jesus in the gospel, he has leveled the playing field. Who is wise and understanding among you? Let them show it. But if you're not among them, thank goodness he says this, levels the playing field. What are we to do? Here's a key. What are we to do? We are not to boast about it, and we're to be honest about it. Do not deny the truth. So who is wise and understanding among you? Not one of us, right? And we're not, he's leveled the playing field, and we're not to deny that. My teacher, he was here for the evangelism conference, Dr. Jerry Root. He talks about, he lectures all over the world. He talked about a lecture he gave at Oxford, and he was invited to High Table. Do you know what High Table is at Oxford? Have you seen Harry Potter movies? You know the dining hall scenes? That's High Table. It's actually filmed in one of the colleges at Oxford. And so the professors sit up front. Everyone's in academic garb, and he says that you could cut the pretense with a knife. He sits down at High Table. A history professor across from him asks him, "So, why are you a Christian?" She's hoping for an intellectual debate. He says, "Because I am self-aware enough to know that I am broken beyond my ability to fix it. And the only thing that I've found to help is to put my faith in Jesus, who is working on me in ways that I can't explain." And she says, "Well, that's fine, but that's not my problem." And so he responds, he's like, "Oh, I think I understand. It also took me about 3 to 4 weeks to become perfect as well." And everyone starts laughing. And she says, "You got me." And he says, "I'm not here to get anyone, but your laughter has betrayed you. Because each of you knows, you laughed because each of you knows that you have brokenness in your life that you cannot fix." And that opened up the conversation from there. This is what James is talking about. If you have envy, selfish ambition, don't boast about it, number one, and also don't deny the truth. Be aware and honest of your brokenness. We're gonna keep going, because there's some gems here then. What do we do beyond that? But the wisdom, verse 17, the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial, and you have sincere written there. It's without hypocrisy. It's the Greek word, without hypocrisy. Peacemakers who sow in peace raise a harvest of righteousness. So if we're not boasting about it and we're honest about our brokenness, how do we get to this place? How do we get where we've got wisdom that's pure, that's impartial, that's without hypocrisy? Who among us is without hypocrisy? There's not a person among us that doesn't have ideals that we don't violate maybe every day, every week, or every month. So what do we do? This is where the gospel comes in. We honestly see ourselves, and we honestly see Jesus, who wants to work in our lives, wants to scratch. Well, you know The Voyage of the Dawn Treader, C.S. Lewis's book in the Chronicles of Narnia. Eustace, the greedy kid, goes and he steals gold from a dragon's lair. And what happens to Eustace? He turns into a dragon. What can fix him? His tears can't. His frustrations can't. He can't rip the scales off. What does he do? It has to be Aslan, the Christ figure, the great lion who comes and with his great claws picks off scale after scale. So what do we do before people? John Stott, or before others who are looking at our lives. John Stott, the great evangelist and preacher in the Church of England, he said, to win people for Christ, one must be an authentic person. Who's authentic? We're authentic when we honestly can name our brokenness and say, I know the one who is working on me in these areas. Would you like to know him too? That's how we start heading towards that wisdom. We're honest about our brokenness and we invite Jesus into that. Okay, so there's gospel for you, okay? If you take nothing away, take that away. But let's get to some more meat about what's going on inside of us that we don't have this wisdom? That we don't have this wisdom. What's going on inside of us? All right, we're digging even deeper now. Chapter 4, verse 1. What causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? You want something, but don't get it. You kill and covet, but you cannot have what you want. You quarrel and fight. You do not have because you do not ask God. When you ask, you do not receive because you ask with wrong motives, that you may spend what you get on your pleasures. You adulterous people, don't you know that friendship with the world is hatred toward God? Anyone who chooses to be a friend of the world becomes an enemy of God. What is James saying? What is at the source of this lack of wisdom is the division within our own selves. The division within our own selves. We're afraid, let me put it this way, that we're afraid of what we're missing out on. That ourselves, we're never whole and integrated inside of us. All of the world's wars, all of the factions, all of the fighting that happens in families and in the world comes from people who are divided within themselves. Voldemort is a reflection of all of humankind, the divided soul. That's where everything, people that are whole in their souls don't cause factions and wars with others. They sow in peace. So, divisions within ourselves. Montaigne, let's talk about that. Montaigne was a 16th century philosopher. He says, I'm going to get control of my life. I'm going to explore my thoughts. I'm going to get focus in life. So he goes up into a tower, and within two minutes, he says that his thoughts were like galloping horses that he had no control over. Here is the irony of human life. Again, Stephen Batchelor points this out. The irony is that we think as human beings, we have realms of control over which we have control and exercise control, when in fact, we can't even control our own thoughts. I will prove it to you. If we had 2 minutes and I wasn't being so long-winded, I'd have you sit here in silence for 2 minutes and tell you to focus on something, and not a single person in this room wouldn't have had 18,000 thoughts besides the things I told them to focus on. Isn't that the irony of human life? We think we're in control of things, and we can't even control our own thoughts. It's the divided self. And do you know what exacerbates this? Where did I put it down? This right here, all right? So let's talk about this. I love technology. Technology is great, all right? I know some people that are like, I'm not into all that technology. I'm old school. It's like, oh, yeah, let's have you talk with Gutenberg about what technology you're into. This is technology, folks, all right? Do you know we have more books in our St. Francis Library than Plato probably ever read in his lifetime? Which of you can say that you're more learned than Plato, all right? but we, you know, I was just talking with someone today. We go into that library, we're not distracted by everything in there, right? We've come to adjust to that technology. We've not, the next spiritual frontier for us is adjusting to the technology we do have. But what's at issue there? Is that it exacerbates what's our problem anyway, which is distraction. Dallas Willard says the great spiritual danger of this age is distraction in the sense of fear of missing out, that what I'm doing right now is not as important as what I could be doing. I'm not enough. I don't have enough. I don't have enough wisdom. I've got to ask Google. It's the great lie that we're all tempted to believe. I mean, it's even worse. You read about Francis Haugen whistleblowing on Facebook, right? And the ways that this gets ingrained. So she talks about how kids, despite my stunningly youthful looks, I am not a kid maybe anymore, but she says kids in high school and middle school go to bed. The last thing they see before they go to bed is bullying. The first thing they see when they wake up is bullying. That's been different than any other generation. We are not enough. We don't have enough. This is the great danger. It's not technology's problem. It's human heart problem. It's just exacerbated by what we have. This is the divided self. This is what causes wars and factions among us. Wisdom, compassion, we're not integrated. There's a famous Shuangzi, a Chinese philosopher, said this: When an archer shoots at a target for no prize, he has all his skill. When he shoots to win a brass buckle, he is already nervous. And when he shoots for gold, to win gold, he is blind, out of his mind, and sees two targets. Distraction. But here is the truth. You have everything that you need. You have everything that you need present with you now. And if you don't believe me, you say you're wrong. Well, what can you expect from a sinner? I'm not any wiser or understanding than you guys are. It's okay. There's liberty in this. When James leveled the plane, you know, we're here in this together. So what do we do about this? Well, it's like the boy, divided attention. It's like the boy who asked his mom for a bike. He says, "Mom, I want a bicycle." She says, "When Christmas comes, write a letter to Santa and ask for a bicycle." He says, "But it's not Christmas time yet." She says, "Write a letter to Jesus." So he says, sits down with pen and pad, and he writes to Jesus, "Dear Jesus, I am a good boy, and I want a bicycle." And he thinks, "No, that's not right." So he erases the first line, and he says, "Sometimes I'm a good boy, and I want a bicycle." And he thinks, he's like, that's not right either. So he erases the first line again, and he says, "Dear Jesus, I think about being a good boy, and I want a bicycle." And he gets stricken by conscience, and he races again, and he takes a walk outside, and he's like, "What do I write?" And he sees a statue of the Virgin Mary, and he gets an idea, and he grabs the statue, runs home, puts it under his bed, and he says, "Dear Jesus, if you want to see your mother again, please give me a bicycle." All right? So if we ask wrongly, James is not saying that you shouldn't be open in asking, what you need before God. It's just that we ask with divided hearts. We have no idea what we need. So there we go, back to the very first beginning. Who am I? And what do I need? There is the essence of wisdom. Seeing ourselves, others, the world in light of God, the first thing we have to know is that we're broken. All right? It's a liberating thing to know that you're broken. Again, Anthony DeMello, he says, "I've had enough of this talk about I'm okay, you're okay." He says, "I'm going to write a book, and the title of the book is going to be I'm an Ass, You're an Ass." And he says, that's the liberating thing. He's like, then people tell me, "You're wrong about what you're saying. What can you expect from an ass?" Of course, you know, liberating. All right, first we know we're broken, and only Jesus can fix it. Then we start being aware of ourselves. Then we can start asking God for what we really, truly need. All right, so here's the solution. James has got it. It's all here. Verse 5 and following. We're going to finish up this passage and end with this. "Do you think Scripture says, speaks in vain? I'm giving a different little translation here, verse 5. Do you think Scripture speaks in vain? Does the Spirit that God caused to live in us long to the point of causing jealousy in us? The rhetorical answer is no. Jealousy doesn't come from the Spirit. It comes from the devil, comes from us. We are aware of it. We're aware we're broken. But God gives us more grace. That's why Scripture says God opposes the proud but gives grace to the humble. Do you see that? We're aware of our own brokenness. We're self-aware. Submit yourselves then to God. Resist the devil and he will flee from you. Come near to God and he will come near to you. Wash your hands, you sinners. Purify your hearts. Remember, wisdom is pure. You what? Double-minded. There's the division. We got monkey minds. Grieve, mourn, and wail. Change your laughter to mourning and your joy to gloom. Humble, there's that word again, yourselves before the Lord, and he will lift you up. What's the key? What's the key to gaining wisdom? Who's someone saying it? Humility. Humility is not thinking badly about yourselves. Humility, we could use a synonym for it, is honesty. It's aware of our own brokenness, aware of our limitations. Humility is what God can work with. We are self-aware. All right? Does us no good to believe, I'm going to speak boldly here, does us no good to believe in Jesus and leave a wake of hurt in our, you know, in our passion for Christ, leave a path of death and destruction and, you know, in our wake? Because we're not self-aware. When we are self-aware, Jesus has the material to work with to start peeling away those scales, to start changing us from the inside out. Humility, self-awareness, knowing our brokenness before God, levels the playing field between all of us. Guess what? We don't get to be mean to anyone else. Who of us is wise or understanding? And it gives God the raw materials to work with to make us wise with a wisdom that's pure, merciful, full of good fruit, and without hypocrisy.